Okay. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's going to be even more of a pleasure for me to share with you the things that I'm going to tell you tonight. Because the theme of what I'm going to tell you is summarized in these words. Abortion is collapsing. And I want to show you why that is inevitable, and I want to show you some of the signs that what is inevitable is in fact upon us now. And I want to say right from the start, of course, that this in no way implies that we are to in any way relax our efforts in some ways, and I'll show you also why we have to intensify them in all ways. But brothers and sisters, the abortion industry and the abortion mentality is collapsing before our eyes. And you know why? Because it's what I call the dead-end rule. You know what the dead-end rule is? People going down a dead-end road who do not pay attention to the dead-end sign will soon learn by personal experience that the road they are on is a dead-end. That's the dead-end rule. We have been telling America for a long time, and I'm aware that the Akron Right to Life is among the very first Right to Life societies in our country. We've been telling the country for a long time that abortion on demand is a dead end. It's not going to solve the problems of the pregnant woman. It's not going to solve the problems of her family. It's not going to solve the problems of our society. And many have refused to listen. Many have listened, and none of them regret it, but many have refused to listen. They have gone down the dead-end road as if the dead-end sign either weren't there or weren't telling the truth. But now they are finding more and more by personal experience that it is a dead-end. Because, brothers and sisters, it's not because of any expertise, intelligence, power, or influence of our own that this movement succeeds. It is simply because the message we proclaim is the truth. That doesn't give any special credit to us. If anything, it gives us more responsibility. But it's the power of the truth itself that brings about the victory. And as was said in the civil rights movement, truth pressed to the earth will rise again. No lie can live forever. America has been living a lie, especially the last 23 years, but no lie can live forever. You can push truth under the rug, you know. You can lock it up. If you lock truth up by closing the front door, it'll come out the back door. And if you lock the back door, it'll come out the window. And if you lock the window, it'll come out the roof. But one way or another, the truth always comes out. Now let me show you now how it's coming out in so many different directions, showing in fact that life is victorious over abortion. First of all, the voice of the women themselves. The other side in this issue has for so long tried to portray themselves as the defenders of women's rights. But it is the women of our country themselves, including those who have had the abortion experience, who are standing up, who are speaking out, who are organizing themselves in greater numbers than ever before and saying, this is wrong. You may be aware of the National Women's Coalition for Life, a coalition of 14 women's organizations that bonded together in this coalition in 1992 and speak out with a membership that is several times greater than that of the National Organization for Women. This National Women's Coalition for Life, I mean, let me read the groups that belong to this. In fact, I'm going to give you some phone numbers during the course of all of this if you have a little 10, you might be interested in following up on some of the things I'm going to tell you. But this National Women's Coalition for Life consists of American Victims of Abortion, Capitol Hill Women for Life, Feminists for Life, Fortress International, International Black Women's Network, Life After Assault League, National Association of Pro-Life Nurses, National Council of Catholic Women, Professional Women's Network, Victims of Choice, Women Affirming Life, Women Exploited by Abortion, Women for Faith and Family, Women for Women. Brothers and sisters, what's happening here? We're not calling these groups to come together. They're coming together on their own. You notice some of the names of these groups indicate groups of women who have had abortions and are standing up and saying, we have been exploited. We have been deceived. We have been injured. Abortion is a dead end. You don't see groups of people coming together to grieve over the fact and to find support and consolation over the fact that they've had their appendix removed or their tonsils taken out, do you? But you find women coming together on their own initiative to seek the help and support they need following abortion. The number, by the way, of this National Women's Coalition for Life is 708-848-5351. It's something worth promoting. The voice of the women is being heard with a new feminism. In fact, the Pope, in his encyclical, The Gospel of Life, calls for a new feminism. And some of the most powerful arguments that our society needs to hear are precisely the feminist arguments for life. If, for example, women rightfully object to the idea that the value of their lives is determined by men, and that they are treated as property by some men, then why is it that they should make the same mistake and be the judges of the value of their lives of their own children or treat them as property? To be pro-abortion is to be anti-feminist, and the original founders of the women's rights movement in this country were pro-life and said so. You know, the abortion industry is collapsing. Furthermore, as more and more of the truth comes out about how women are deceived, exploited, injured, and killed in the legal abortion industry. You know, one of the things that's happening in our country is this. People are becoming more and more conflicted within their own mind and soul about abortion. We used to talk about the mushy middle, you know, those who, well, they're kind of on the fence, couldn't quite make up their mind about where they stood on this issue. Well, they're no longer mushy. They're conflicted. They have gotten the idea that we have done a good job in communicating that abortion is wrong because it kills a baby. And it's undeniable that it destroys a baby. We'll get a little bit into that in a second. But at the same time, they hold that, well, the government shouldn't interfere with this. It should be the woman's choice. It should be legal. Because after all, sometimes it's needed by the woman. And we'll look into in a moment more specifically what the American people think about this. But there is this conflict in the minds of so many people trying to hold both these ideas at once. What needs to be done to get them out of that conflict and out of the middle and over to the full truth? Well, to help them to see that what's bad for the child is bad for the mother too. You can't destroy the baby of a woman who's carrying that child without destroying her. It can never be beneficial to her. And so as loud and as clear as we proclaim the message that abortion kills a baby, we have to proclaim the message that abortion hurts women. Now we have a tool in this for this message, which you may be aware of, a book that just came out in January of 96, Lyme 5, Exploited by Choice. This is a book of case after case after case documented of how the so-called safe and legal abortion industry has mean, exploited, even sexually abused women inside the halls of the so-called safe legal facilities. This book is powerful, and I urge you to obtain a copy of it and read it. It is bringing us to the cutting edge of what needs to be said today, and it offers a contract with American women based on the simple truth that although abortion in our country is currently legal, malpractice is not. And the least that those who want to be considered on the side of women can do is to protect those women against an unscrupulous abortion industry. This is not a conflict of mother and child. This is one of the other reasons for the deadlock. This is not a conflict. How can a mother be in conflict with her own child, or vice versa? We can't present it in that fashion. The real conflict is between mom and baby together versus legal abortion, because legal abortion destroys them both. This Line 5 book shows that beyond a doubt. And if you want to obtain it, by the way, 817-380-8800. 817-380-8800 is the number where you can get this book. Other things like the studies of the link between abortion and an increased risk of breast cancer. We've heard things about this. Well, you can't turn medical science backwards. The more studies that are done, the more the truth is going to come out. The link is quite clear when you look at the various studies that have been released. In fact, we now have states, a couple of states in our country already have passed laws requiring that women seeking abortions be informed that they are putting themselves at greater risk of breast cancer. The truth comes out of its own. So the voices of the women themselves are being heard. Then we have the voices of those who have promoted abortion, who have even performed abortion, and even those who still promote it. Their voices, too, are bearing witness to the fact that the abortion mentality is collapsing. You might know of what is called the check valve effect. Certainly you've seen it in your own experience. The check valve effect means that when people switch from one position to another on abortion, it is overwhelmingly a switch from the pro-abortion to the pro-life position. You don't see people going the other way. One area of exception is politicians who have their finger in the wind. They can't even interpret the wind. But the check valve effect is true. People move in the direction pro-abortion to pro-life. Why? It's very simple. The power of the truth. We are made according to truth. We are made to seek truth, and people move in the direction of the truth when they are open to it. I've talked to her a number of times. I've blessed her house. I will be with her again shortly, and you know of her story now. Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade. Norma now works full-time at the national headquarters of Operation Rescue. Here's a letter she sent to me recently, which she had published in a paper down in Dallas, where she lives. Let me quote what she says in this letter, just to make her position absolutely clear. I'm pro-life clear across the board. I believe all abortions are wrong. The Jane Roe of Roe versus Wade. She wears a t-shirt now. No abortions, it says on the back of it. I'm pro-life. No compromise, no exceptions, no apologies. Brothers and sisters, what's happening here? How is it that she has so changed her mind? Well, because she's one of hundreds of former abortion providers, because she worked in an abortion facility prior to her conversion, hundreds of abortion providers in our country who have left this industry, who have seen that it's a dead end, and she's one of thousands of would-be or former promoters in one way or another of abortion who have in fact changed. You know, I know a good number of the former abortionists. Some of them have a very high profile, speak about it all over the country. People like Carol Everett. You may, of course, Dr. Bernard Nathanson, who was not only an abortionist, but one of those who got the whole abortion rights movement started in this country. As of this date, he's preparing for entrance into the Catholic Church. But Dr. Nathanson, but they're not, these are the most visible ones, but they're not the only ones. I know, for example, Joy Davis from Birmingham, 12 years in the abortion industry. Helen Pendley from Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Tony Lorenzino from upstate New York. You may know of the Meet the Abortion Providers conferences that that Joe Scheidler holds every couple of years in Chicago. What you may not be aware of is that there is an international association of former providers of abortion. They have had a number of meetings, but they were not public conferences. You know what they were? They were private sessions conducted under the direction of a psychotherapist. Private sessions in which they get together to seek their own healing from the wounds inflicted on them by a profession of killing babies. This international group of former abortion providers will be meeting again. And do you know what they're called? The Society of Centurions. Why centurions? Remember the centurion standing at the cross of Christ? He took part in his death, but when Jesus died, he looked at him and he said, "Surely this was an innocent man." And now these men and women, after having killed babies routinely, have come to the point of seeing, surely these were innocent lives, and they are sorry. It's happening, brothers and sisters. The price of being an abortionist is life as an abortionist. It carries its own price tag. It eats away at the conscience. It deteriorates the personality. One cannot stand long in the midst of that conflict. They are coming out. And we see this reflected in the statistics. You know, there was a recent edition of the newsletter of NARAL, National Abortion and Reproductive Rights Action League. Their column said, "The right wing is winning." NARAL's newsletter said this. One of the reasons they quoted was, well, in 84% of the counties of the United States, there's no abortion provider. And in fact, we can see the numbers declining when we look at the statistics. Hundreds of abortuaries have closed. In 1982, there was a peak of 2,908 abortion providers in our country. 1992, it was only 2,380. It is going down. And not only that, but when you look at those who are still doing it, they are older and grayer than ever. And most of those currently entering the field of obstetrics and gynecology want nothing to do with performing abortions. This is one of the reasons why the other side is going frantically crazy in a search for who's going to do the abortions. This is one of these are the political motives behind their efforts to have medical schools require training in abortion and to promote chemical or do-it-yourself methods of abortion. Why are they trying to do this? Or to pass laws that would allow non-physicians to do abortion? Why are they doing all these things? Why are they making all these efforts? Because they're getting desperate. Who's going to do it? You see, it's not just a question of, look how terrible the laws are. We could end up in this country with a legal structure of abortion set in stone, and nobody willing to do it. Do we win in that case? Of course. We change the actual way that people live. The laws will catch up. We have to work to change the laws. And the laws must eventually reflect the respect for life, otherwise the country whose laws they are will not survive. But the point of the matter is, let's not make a mistake about what's going to happen first. We may end up with a structure of legalized abortion that nobody wants anything to do with anymore. Now, You might have seen in the New Republic the article that appeared in the October 16, 1995 issue called Our Bodies, Our Souls by pro-choice feminist Naomi Wolf. Any of you saw it? You know what she said? You get a hold of this article, but here's the subtitle of the article is Rethinking Pro-Choice Rhetoric. It's titled Our Bodies, Our Souls, and here's what she says at the beginning of the article. She's talking to her colleagues in the pro-choice movement, and she's recommending a major change of strategy on their part. Well, listen to what she says. We are in danger of losing something more important than votes. We stand in jeopardy of losing what can only be called our souls. Clinging to a rhetoric about abortion in which there is no life and no death, we entangle our beliefs in a series of self-delusions, fibs, and evasions, and we risk becoming precisely what our critics charge us with being, callous, selfish, and casually destructive men and women who share a cheapened view of human life. And she goes on to say, in the following pages, I will argue for a radical shift in the pro-choice movement's rhetoric and consciousness about abortion. Now listen to what she says here. I will maintain that we need to contextualize the fight to defend abortion rights within a moral framework that admits that the death of the fetus is a real death, that there are degrees of culpability, judgment, and responsibility involved in the decision to abort a pregnancy, and that we need to be strong enough to acknowledge that this country's high rate of abortion, which ends more than a quarter of all pregnancies, can only be rightly understood as a failure. She goes on to say later in the article, it is undeniable what the pro-lifers say when they say abortion stops the beating heart. Brothers and sisters, you see what's happening here? The other side realizes that unless they start facing the truth of what an abortion is, they're going to lose the public altogether because people just don't go for that. When something is obvious, you admit it. And if you have a different opinion about it, well, then you express your opinion and you try to defend it, but you don't evade the truth. It's the power of the truth that's making these people worry that their strategy isn't really working. Even the way that some people on the other side talk about abortion. Remember Kate Michelman got stuck in that interview when she said abortion is a bad thing? And somebody called her about that, and she said, oh, I would never, 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 never say that. Five nevers. The only problem is the reporter had it on tape. And that's a bad thing. How about the president? I want to make abortion safe, legal, but rare. Well, Mr. President, wait a minute now. If it's a constitutional right, why do you want to make it rare? And do we talk that way about any other constitutional rights? Freedom of assembly. Well, it should be safe, legal, but rare. Freedom of speech, safe, legal, but rare. No, freedom of religion, safe, legal, but rare. No, we don't talk about that way. See, there's an ambivalence in the hearts of even those who are standing up at the heart and center of the so-called pro-choice effort. The truth comes out, brothers and sisters, whether people want to admit it or not. The truth comes out not only in the voice of abortion promoters and providers, but also in the voice of science itself. It always has been on our side. There's not one shred, not one fraction of a shred of evidence for the ridiculous claim that what is in the womb of a pregnant human mother is something other than a human baby. Not one shred of any objective evidence that anyone can point to. But you know, although we have always had all the evidence on our side when it comes to science, it's becoming even more and more and more obvious nowadays. The Roe v. Wade decision came down in 1973. At that time, Justice Blackmun said, well, it's not within the competence of the judiciary to speculate as to the answer of the question of when human life begins. Well, first of all, even back in 1973, we didn't have to speculate about it. But in 1996, when you look at the progress of medical technology, 23 years is like centuries. I have in my office two books sitting side by side on the shelf. One of them is called The Unborn Patient, Fetal Diagnosis, Treatment, and Cure. It describes how you can do operations on the unborn child, which some physicians are doing. The Unborn Patient is the title of the book. The book right next to it, written by Warren Hearn from Boulder, Colorado, Abortion Practice, describing how, and these are the words he uses in the book, how to dismember and decapitate the baby and the woman. Now, how can you have these two books on the shelves at the same time? Why are we able to do fetal surgery? Because we are able better than ever before to visualize the baby. Fetal surgery requires fetal visualization, and you are way beyond the point of ultrasound. Ultrasound basically gives you lights and shadows. We're way beyond that. In fact, we're even beyond taking pictures of the baby in the womb. There are brand new developments, such as embryoscopy, which is the latest, most accurate, most comprehensive, perfect view of the child developing in the womb that we can have. And Dr. Jack Wilkie also describes something that is still in research called interactive visualization of volume data, or in vivo. Let me read what he says. He says, this new technique generates three-dimensional instead of flat images. With it, we're able to see the baby from different angles and can focus on different parts of the baby's body. And then there's a Dr. Frank Manning from the University of Manitoba who says, quote, the line between fetuses and adults is blurring. We are now looking at fetuses as patients. We now have the capacity to install shunts, perform laser surgery, ligate vessels, and even to split the placenta in twin births. These new imaging techniques are crucial to making these procedures possible. You see what's happening? Medical science is not going to go backwards. It's only going to go forward. And where are we going forward into? We're going forward into truth, which is already there, which already has been there, always has been there, and which we've been bearing witness to. But whether people want to hear it or not, it doesn't change and it doesn't go away. As a matter of fact, as of this evening's talk, mid-February of 1996, the United States Congress has agreed to hold hearings on the question of when human life begins. Now, you know, we're not going to be surprised at what those hearings find. They're going to bring in experts in embryology fetology and all of these sciences, and they're just going to lay it out on the table. And you know, this makes perfect sense to do this, because after all, it's facing the question that the court in 1973 refused to answer. When it comes to the question of legal personhood, of course, the court did answer that, and it said, no, personhood does not include the unborn. But when it came to the question of the humanity of the baby, which is a distinct question from legal personhood, the court didn't say no. The court said, I don't know. They refused to answer the question. So now we're bringing forward the evidence. Now, as you may know, the evidence was brought forward to the Supreme Court again, but the court refused to hear the case. The case that arose out of New Jersey, Alexander Loos, who tried to stop the abortion of his own child, brought in medical experts at the state level in New Jersey. And the judge was so persuaded by the medical evidence that he said, well, you got it. You know, life certainly does begin at conception. He said, however, the abortion was legal, and therefore the abortion was, and these are the exact words of the judge, the legal execution of a human being. Well, that evidence that persuaded him that it was a human being was brought up to the doors of the Supreme Court, but they refused to open the door. They refused to face the question that they had also refused to face over 20 years prior to that.